Hey, I got to meet today Marcus, and I had a nice little chat with him today, and I'm so glad he's here to share tonight. His sobriety date is June 10th, 5 years ago. And just a little trivial information, and maybe he'll share more about this because I haven't researched it yet, but June 10th also signifies a birth date for AA, when things were just established. I'm not sure. I have to check into that some more myself, but I love that kind of information. Marcus is from Vallejo originally, and I think right now he's in Sacramento, and his home group is Midtown Solutions of Sacramento. He's also part of the Vallejo Fellowship, if you ever enter into the Vallejo area. Trying to get these names right this week because I messed up last week. So one thing that I very much get excited about is H&I, and I hope he shares some of his experience, strength, and hope about his H&I connections and involvement as well. He's got a great story. I heard a lot of great information, but I don't want to give it away. So, Marcus, if we could all give him a big welcoming round of applause from the Valley Group, it'd be fantastic. So, thank you, Marcus.
excuse me. How's everyone doing this evening? My name is Marcus, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. As he said, my sobriety date is June 10th, 2015. That's not my first sobriety date. But this is my standing sobriety date. My home group is Midtown Solutions in Sacramento, but I also have a secondary, home group, which is, the Vallejo Fellowship in Vallejo, California, because that's where everything began at for me. I was born and raised in Vallejo and lived there for 31 years before, migrating to, Sacramento, which we know it as doing geographicals, because everywhere I go, there I am. You know what I'm saying? I want to start off because how I was taught by my spiritual advisor, I was taught to share from the big book, and because the big book is factual, and then everything from that point going forward is my experiences and my opinions. So I want to start with this paragraph, which is in Bill's story. It's on page 8 of the big book, and it says this: "Trembling, I stepped from the hospital a broken man. Fear sobered me for a bit. Then came the insidious insanity of that first drink, and on Armistice Day, 1934, I was off again. Everyone became resigned to the certainty that I would have to be shut up somewhere or would stumble along to a miserable end. How dark it is before the dawn. In reality, that was the beginning of my last debauch. I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes." And we just, she just read that in chapter 7, right? To see a fellowship grow up out of us. And I was blessed with the opportunity to experience that while incarcerated. And I was incarcerated for 20 months. And I was able to experience that, being rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence. What I just read is a two-part paragraph. But when I read this, I said I had arrived. I had arrived because this was me. That first part of that paragraph where he said trembling, I stepped into the hospital, a broken man, that was me. That was me like a month prior to being pulled out. Because my disease, I break out in handcuffs. That's what my disease takes me to. And I break out from handcuffs anywhere from DUIs to driving with totally illegal, from a suspended license to other forms of alcohol in the car, just illegal. Domestic violence situations, that's what my disease, when I drink alcohol, I break out. I am, as the Big Book describes, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know, I transform, I metamorphose. I am not the same person sober as I am drinking. But as my disease progressed and got into the later stages of it, it was just straight Dr. Hyde. It was no more Dr. Jekyll. It was just all Mr. Hyde. You know what I'm saying? Dr. Hyde. So, yeah, that's what my disease looks like. So anyway, as that paragraph was saying, I went to the hospital about three, 4 o'clock in the morning because I had severe abdominal pains and I had been drinking all day because in my disease, from the time I wake up to wherever I pass out, I'm drinking. I'm having a drink, right? If I had a cup on the nightstand from the night before and I woke up and it still had alcohol in it, I'm drinking that on the way down to the refrigerator to make me a cold one to get my day kickstarted and to get going. That's what, how my alcoholic, looks like. That's where it had progressed to. So anyway, as I went to this hospital to get checked out, the doctors checked me out in the examination room. They did an MRI on me. And when he came back, he said, excuse me, young man. He said, how much do you drink? I said, no. The question is, how much I don't drink? And he was like, well, I know you can't go cold turkey, but you're going to have to slow down an awful lot or you getting ready to take a slow ride in a black car. And I was like, black car? I was like, but I came here in a green car. The car I came here in was green, not black, right? Sarcasm, that's part of my alcoholism, right? And I'm, you know, intoxicated. He's like, no. He's like, the black car I'm talking about is a hearse. He said, you are weighing 160 pounds. You are weighing 160 pounds right now. You are severely malnutritioned and underweight for a man your size. Not only that, you have spots on your pancreas, and you are beginning stages of cirrhosis of the liver. Wow. 42 years old, and I just been told that I'm literally at a death sentence right now. So like it talked about in the Big Book, fear came in for a moment, you know what I'm saying? Because I know what cirrhosis of the liver looks like. I had an uncle who died in Soledad State Prison from cirrhosis of the liver. It's a very ugly disease. So the fear was there for a minute, but right along with the fear was the insidious insanity going right along with it of that next drink. So I'm sitting there, and then I call my mom and tell my mom about what's going on. And my mom is like, please, son, stop. Please stop drinking. I'm watching my only son commit suicide. I'm watching my own son kill himself. And I was like, man, Mom, I can't stop. I can't stop drinking, you know. And she was crying, and I can feel her cries even right now as I share. And so I got off the phone with my mom. I got up. I walked out of the examination room, walked back through the hospital corridors, walked back into the emergency waiting room, and walked through the sliding doors that I walked in through, and walked to the car, crossed the parking lot to the car that brought me. And when I got back inside of that green car that brought me, I reached down and I picked up a peach Amsterdam bottle of vodka, and I had me another drink. That's what my disease looks like. In the forward to the first edition, it speaks about how the first 100 men and women have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Well, I just shared with you what my hopeless state of mind and body looked like. You know what I'm saying? And so it was probably about 30 days later, I broke out in handcuffs. I was pulled over, and as a result of what I had in that vehicle at the time and not being a licensed driver, I was arrested. And God said, enough was enough. My son has had enough. And I was arrested and I was escorted by way of Sacramento PD in the black and white chariot. And they escorted me to Sacramento County Jail, 651 I Street. And they I became a resident inside of a hotel, Sacramento County. And that's where my journey began at that point. Now, I'll go back to the beginning. Everything that I share is just my experiences. It's not why I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because I suffer from the disease of alcoholism. My disease is a threefold disease. I suffer from a physical allergy coupled with a mental obsession, and I have a spiritual malady. What that spiritual malady looks like is I have a God-sized hole in my heart, and I have tried everything except for other forms of alcohol, meaning drugs. I've tried everything possible to fill that hole up that only gave me minimal amounts of satisfaction, and only to have to want more and more and more of it, because my disease, I don't know, I don't understand one and done. All I know is more and more and more. And if it gives me a good feeling, then I want more of it. I can be considered a adrenaline junkie. Like, I give you an example, right? Me and my girlfriend can get into an argument, and that argument, it gives me an injection. It gives me a rush. So I can, from getting that sensation or whatnot, I can go into that argument and be in that argument for 3 days. I can be in that argument for 3 days. And by the time I come out of that argument, I don't even know what we was arguing about to begin with, because it's giving me an adrenaline rush, and I want more of that. I want more. It's giving me a good feeling, and I want more of that. So I can obsess over anything. Just because I'm not drinking don't mean that the obsession can't come back. I can obsess over anything, whether people, places, or things. And what that looks like an emotional relapse. Because what I'm doing is I'm looking outside of myself to change the way that I feel on the inside of me. That means that I'm no longer doing the work. I'm no longer doing the work that I need to do on a daily basis, right? And so now that I'm not doing that, now I'm looking outside of me to change me on the inside, to change the way that I feel about me on the inside. And I've gone through a few emotional relapses, and it's not pretty. It's not pretty, because what comes behind the emotional relapse is the emotional hangover. And the emotional hangover is brutal. It's brutal because the fact that, you know, when you get a hangover from drinking, all you gotta do is drink what you had the night before and get the hangover off you. Well, emotional hangover, you can't do that. You can't do that. And what emotional hangover is depression. So in order to get that up off you, you got to get in service. You got to get in service. You got to do some work, and you got to work with another alcoholic to get that depression up off you. Because if not, it's going to sit, it's going to sit, it's going to sit. So to the point where what? You're going to look for that easier, softer way and take that drink. You know what I'm saying? So I've experienced these along my 5 years of being sober. So anyway, I'll go to the beginning of my story. I was born as a result of an extramarital affair. My father was married. My mother was who he had the affair with. So as a result of this, I was born as a result of a lie. And so that lie needs to be protected. So as a result, to protect this lie, I was lied about who I was. My brothers and sisters on that side of my family, my father's side of my family, didn't know who I was. They didn't know that I was their brother or sister. So now, as I'm a young kid and growing, I'm learning through these experiences dysfunctional behaviors to the point that I start practicing them as I get in my teenage years, that they now become my survival skills. So I learned early on to lie, to manipulate. So now my lie, I've learned this and cultivated it and crafted it to the point that now my lie is now my truth. That I lie to myself so much that I believe the lies that I tell myself. See, you guys, y'all can lie to me and it won't do nothing to me. It won't harm me or anything. But once I believe the lie up here, I'm up shit creek without a boat or a paddle. I'm screwed. You know what I'm saying? Because I have no mental defense against the first drink. That but a power that's greater than myself. Right? So anyway, going back into my childhood, so I'm learning through my experiences the dysfunctional patterns, right? And there was a functional alcoholic. I can't even say functional because that's a misbelief from what I was taught by my spiritual advisor. The man that raised me that I look to today as my father figure was an alcoholic. He was an alcoholic, so I seen it growing up at a young age, right? So going back to my experiences on my other side of my family, I developed my physical features very rapidly at a young age to the point that at like 4 years old, 3-4 years old, my sisters and brothers, they're like, Grandma, hold on. You said this is just a kid that you babysitting, but he looked just like Dad. He looked just like our father. You know what I'm saying? So the lie is out, who I really am. You know what I'm saying? It can't be protected no more. So they find out who I am now. So that was an experience, being hid in closets, back rooms, or whatnot. You know, that was an experience. So when my next experience came along that was traumatic, it wasn't no secret that I was withholding from coming forward about what happened. You know, and that experience, I was probably like 6 years old, and I was sexually molested. I was sexually molested by the babysitter. And let me just say, more times than not, that sexual molestation happens by somebody close to the family rather than a stranger. It happens more so by somebody close to the family. And so this happened to be the babysitter's son. And he did it not once, not twice, but more than three times, to the point that I still have PTSD behind that experience. But I've gotten a lot better with the help of the 12-step program and my support network or whatnot, and also outside help as well. But at the same time, what I found out through working these steps was that I was projecting. See, I was projecting onto other people my experience. My experience with that situation, I was projecting to people that were of homosexual preference. I appalled them. It was grotesque to me. I wanted nothing to do with them, not to be. I don't care if you was a family member or anything. I didn't want nothing to do with that. But here's the thing is that their sexual preference is not who did what they did to me. They had nothing to do with what happened to me. That's just their sexual preference. You see what I'm saying? So I found out through the steps that I was projecting onto them what really was going on inside of me. And I was taking it out on innocent people that had nothing to do with that. And so through working these steps and practicing these principles in all my affairs, I now have brothers and sisters of that gender that I love and love me back. And they are a part of my support network. And I check on them, they check on me, and we have real healthy relationships. And that's as a result, again, of this program and doing my fourth step and looking at me, looking at what's going on inside of me. You know what I'm saying? And so it's helped me a lot. But See, I held this inside of me growing up. So growing up as a teenager, I didn't know how to deal with this. I had questions in my head. How did this happen to me? Why did this happen to me? What made this person do this to me? Am I gay? Am I straight? These are all unanswered questions that are swirling in my head that I don't even understand. I don't even know how to deal with it because I don't even know how to come with the truth because all I know is lie and to withhold. So I don't even know how to deal, so I keep it inside of me. But these questions turned into demons. They turned into demons. And so when I became a teenager, when I found out about women, girls, and I experienced being intimate or sexual with the other side, it was a way that, yet again, I'm looking outside myself to fix me and change me the way I feel on the inside. So now I'm done found this source, which now I can reassure myself through this source that I'm a man. I'm a young man. I'm a boy. That I'm straight. There's no gay in me or whatnot. This was a way to answer that. But not knowing that I got a disease called alcoholism. So I like that. I like that. So now I become obsessive. I become obsessive with it, and I want more, 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 because that's what I know with my disease. So my alcoholism manifested in that, and the only way I found out was when I did my sex inventory, and I seen this, and I seen how my alcoholism manifested in that. How I seen about the lie and about lying to myself, I give you another scenario. My parents could tell me, don't eat no sweets before it's time to have dinner. You know what I'm saying? You got to have dinner first. So I'll be like, okay, all right, I'll go upstairs. But me knowing that it's another way to get into the kitchen without going that same way that I just went, that I can get into the kitchen and I can get to that cookie jar, I'm like, okay, I'm going to wait about 15 minutes and then I'm going to go this other route to get to the cookie jar, right? So I go this other route to get to the cookie jar, but yet still, my parents watching me. They watching me and see me doing it, right? But I believe the lie that's in my head, the script that's already written, right? So, boom, I go this other route, go into the kitchen, go in the cookie jar, get the cookies, put them in my pocket, and get ready to proceed to go back that way that I came in. And they said, hey, didn't we tell you not to get a cookie from the cookie jar and not to eat sweets before dinner? And I will look at them with a straight face and tell them, I ain't got no cookie. And that cookie, them cookies are sitting in my pocket. Why? Because I believe my lies. I really believe the fact that I ain't got no cookies in my pocket. And they see me dead bang go in there, grab them cookies, and put them in my pocket. The big book describes me as a mental defect. I'm in full flight from reality. So as I did my inventory and looked at this, I seen that I had alcoholism as a kid, as a child. You know what I'm saying? My parents did not fail me. Church did not fail me. The school system did not fail me. They just didn't understand me. They didn't understand what was going on with me. See, Chuck C said it best. Every time I took a drink, it was a solution to a problem I didn't know I had. I didn't know that I had alcoholism. And when I first started the program 18 years prior to 2015, which was in 1996, what I thought alcoholism was, I thought it was the fluid in the bottle. I thought that's what alcoholism was, not knowing that it's right here between these two things. Right here is where my enemy is. My ego is not my amigo. He is not my friend. He is not designed to help to work with me. My ego works against me. That's why the big book says that my ego has to be smashed and my pride has to be leveled. straight up. You feel me? So that's why I went through 18 years of experiences from 1996 to 2015. I went through 18 years of experience. That's when I first got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was not in 1996. It was 1997. 1997, 2015. So I had to go through 18 years of experiences. And what that looks like is the big book describes it as I had to be mangled into submission. I had to be mangled into submission, meaning that you seen what a car looks like after a bad car accident. That's what I had to be. And it was at that point in June 10th, 2015, that I had finally arrived at the end of Marcus. I had finally been emptied out, and my higher power, God, that I call him, Jesus Christ, that's my God. That's my higher power. I don't push that on nobody else. Once Marcus had been emptied out, then he could be poured in. He could be poured in, and now I was able to be honest, open-minded, and willing. The how of how it works. You know what I'm saying? And I was willing to do something different because I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was tired of going in and out of institutions. Let me tell you, when I got out of incarceration in 2017, February 10th, 2017, that was my 19th state correctional facility. Let me say it again. My 19th state correctional, now we ain't counting county jails, we just talking about state prisons. That was my 19th state prison that I've done time in over a course of 20 years. So that means I got more time in jails and institutions than I do in society. I'm what they call institutionalized, quote unquote, right? But guess what? I was institutionalized before I was institutionalized because I was in the prison to the bondage itself, right here, trapped in this box right here. So I was conditioned for a box. I was conditioned for jails and institutions, a controlled environment. So that's why I thrived so well in a controlled environment. And when I got out here, I ran reckless. An alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. Hello, that was me. I did not know how to live in society. So that's why I had, this was vacation, and that had become home, as sad as it's to say, right? And so this time when I got arrested, I knew something was different. I knew something was different. And let me just say, the first time that I drank alcohol, I was 17 years old at high school, and I drank alcoholically. I drank alcoholically my first time with alcohol. And when I drank, I had arrived. I had arrived, and it gave me a feeling that I had never felt before, and it allowed me to step outside of Marcus and be free. But that freedom, it only turned into King Alcohol's dungeon. King Alcohol had become my master. And so when I got arrested again, when I got arrested in 2015, I knew it was different. I knew it was different because that last run was a five-year run, and I had seen myself in ways that I had never seen before. All them, I ain't did that yet. I ain't did them yet. I did them in grand fashion. And I knew. I said, it's over. It's over. The run is over. If I'm going to get sober, I'm going to get sober now. Because, see, I had a moment of clarity about a year prior to. I was at a bar, sitting at a bar, and it was two females sitting on the side of me, and it just hit me. I got emotional and whatnot, and I was like, man, I'm tired. I don't want this life no more. I'm done. I don't want to drink. I don't want to be sitting in bars 7 days a week. I ain't got nothing to show my kids. I ain't got a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. I'm a daddy, but not a father. You know what I'm saying? I want to be a father when I'm in prison. You know what I'm saying? That ain't no way to be, right? So I'm emotional, right? And my friends was like, "What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?" I'm like, "Man, I don't want this life no more. I'm burnt out. I don't want to drink. I don't want this no more." They're like, "Oh, you just tripping. You know, have you another drink?" You know what I'm saying? I'm like, "No, y'all don't get it. I don't want this no more," right? And so it hit me. It was like, man, if I'm going to make it out the eye of this storm, I got to return to a familiar environment. And for an alcoholic like myself, that familiar environment was incarceration. I got to go back to jail. I got to go back to prison because that's familiar to me because I'm prison here. I'm prison in my head, in my mind. So I got to go back there. But I don't got the courage to go, "Hey, Mr. Police Officer, I got this in my pocket. I got this on me. Can you please take me to jail?" Ain't going to happen. But God knows what I needed because he confirmed it not long after I got locked up. And this was when I first learned about a spiritual experience. 4 days after I got locked up, I got transferred from the downtown jail out to the RCCC, to the branch. And I went out there. And so I got processed in and whatnot. And then they went to take us to houses, right? Now, they could have housed me anywhere in that facility because I'm not a blood. I'm not a Crip. I'm not color-coded. I'm just a Northern Black. And so that means they could put me anywhere, right? So they brought me in, processed me, and they took to go house me. So I walk into a dorm. I walk into a dorm to see a bed that I had slept in 5 years previously as a result of a DUI. And the DUI that I had when I got the DUI was from that same bar that I had the moment of clarity at. That's God. That ain't nothing but God. I don't believe in coincidence, accidents, and incidents. I don't believe in that. That was God. And God was showing me what was to come. What was to come too. So, again, I don't push, you know, the Bible or anything on anybody, but it's a scripture in there that confirmed exactly what I had experienced. And it says, as a dog returns to his own vomit, so a fool repeats his own folly. Boom. God took my nose, put it in my vomit by sending me back to that dorm where I had caught a DUI and I laid in that bed 5 years previous. Confirmation. And then the guy next to me in the bunk that I slept in, it says in the big book, right? It says a spiritual toolkit will be placed at your feet, right? It tells you that in the big book. Guess what? The man that slept next to me at the foot of his bed was the big book, this cover, but the big one. So you can't miss it. It's right there. You can't miss it. That ain't no chance. That ain't coincidence. That ain't no accident. But see, I got a thing called self-will, right? Now, it's up to me because God gives me the free will of choice, right? Boom, he placing help right there by me. But am I, because of my ego, because of my pride, because of my self-conscious, am I going to worry about what these people in here, the jailhouse coolios and jailhouse coolios and everybody talking that hip talk about what they was doing and how they was having this and how they was having that, but can't get a wet food stamp sent to them because they got bridges burning high as the Eiffel Tower. You know what I'm saying? All these war stories. Am I going to worry about what they think about me, or am I for the first time going to be like, "Hey, there's a big book right there. Open that thing up," right? So I asked the man sitting next to me. I said, "Hey, man, are you an alcoholic?" He said, "Yeah, I'm an alcoholic." I said, "Man, check this out. I'm an alcoholic to the 10th power. I am a severe alcoholic. And can I share your big book? And he was like, yeah, of course, right? And that was the first time that I opened up the big book of my own free will. Not because of the judge, not because of the girlfriend, not because of the kids, not because of mama and daddy, not for any other reason, but because I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was burnt out, straight up. And I wanted something different. I didn't know what that looked like. I didn't know how it was going to be, but I didn't want what I had. That much I knew. And so I picked up that big book and I started reading, and we started reading it together. And then I come to find out I'm experiencing Dr. Bob and Bill W. One alcoholic working with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope. And I was like, wow, wow. This ain't no chance. This ain't no coincidence. This ain't no accident. This is factual. This is God showing me, you know how to do time. That ain't no problem. You know how to do time standing on your hands. That ain't no problem. You've got institutionalized, but that's not what this is about. This is about recovery. This is about redemption. This is about learning a new way of living, and this is about unlearning everything you have learned up to this point in your life. That's what this journey is going to be about. And man, spiritual experiences just started coming. They just started happening, right? I leave the branch, I go to RCCC. I go to RCCC. Ain't no H&I. Ain't no meetings coming in the reception center. It's 23-hour lockdown. You lock down in a facility inside a cell, 23 hours, one out. Now get this. I'm in a cell. I ended up being in there for 4 months. I'm in there with an active alcoholic. I'm in there with that ain't by chance. That ain't by coincidence. I'm in there with an active alcoholic, and I can't go to him and be like, hey, man, I'm a recovering alcoholic, man, and I'm trying not to drink. Hey, can you not drink? Can you please not drink in this cell? He gonna look at me like, what? If you don't get up out of here with that, that's just how he gonna look at me. Like, we both got to share this cell. You know what I'm saying? But God did that for a reason. God did that for a reason because God had already went out ahead of me and cleared passage for me, right? He don't leave me unprotected, period. He showed me that when he put the big book by me. You know what I'm saying? And then I ordered my own big book because he showed me what this was going to be about, right? So, boom. He put me in that cell to show me that it ain't about the alcohol. It ain't about somebody drinking around you. It's about you. It's always been about you. It's been you versus you, period. You your own worst enemy. Another alcoholic cannot get you drunk. You gonna get you drunk before another alcoholic gets you drunk. That's what that experience showed me. Because he was drinking inside that cell while I was in there. And guess what? I'm sneaky. Remember, I told you about the things that I learned in my experiences. I'm sneaky. I'm manipulative. If I think I can get away with it, guess what? I'm going to try it, right? Guess what? I'm locked up. I'm in prison. Can't nobody on the outside see inside these walls. They can't see in here. So guess what? Oh, man, let me have me a little sippy sip. Let me have me a sip. Oh, I didn't get no mail today. Let me have me a sippy sip. Oh, the yard got shut down early. Let me have me a little sippy sip. You know what I'm saying? Oh, we didn't get to go take showers today. Oh, let me have me a sippy sip. Because I drank for anything. Anything I drank for, right? But guess what? Can't nobody see in there? I can see in here. I can see what's going on, right? But guess what? If I sneak and tip in here, that's why on our coin it say what? To thine own self be true. So guess what? If I sneak and go have me a drink. When I return back to society and that first curveball that life throw, guess what? Oh, let me go over here and tip and have me a drink real quick. Ain't nobody gonna know. Experience shows me that. My experiences show me that. You know, what that look like is called the fuck it. You know what I'm saying? When the buckets come in, you know what I'm saying? The buckets come in. You know what I'm saying? And I'm a get to drink it. And then before long, because my behaviors is not going to be the same. My behaviors is going to start faltering. And so it's only going to be so long before it's picked up on, you know what I'm saying, that I'm doing something that I ain't got no business doing. Right? And then it's going to just be, fuck it. Well, I might as well do what I know. I might as well do what I do. And here I go to the bar to have me a drink. You know what I'm saying? So that's why when I was in that situation and whatnot, to thine own self be true. You know what I'm saying? And I had to look at that. You know what I'm saying? Because what I do now in this time that I'm incarcerated is crucial. It's crucial because this is my gauntlet. This is my gauntlet. In prison, I'm around everything dysfunctional. I'm around everything dysfunctional that I'm around in society. Everything. All my character defects, I'm right here locked in around it, right? So if I can walk through this gauntlet, if I can walk through this course, right, I got a fighting chance when I get back to society. Because this is what God designed for me. God knew what type of course I had to go through to get sober. I can't walk into the rooms of AA full-blown like AIDS, full-blown alcoholic, and no disrespect if anybody, you know what I'm saying? I just use that as an example. Because for me to drink is like cancer. It eats me away. It eats me alive, right? So I can't just walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and get sober. That's not my experience. That's not my story. I've tried it. I've been through, prior to this time, I've been through 6 different residential programs. 6. Okay. And so if I was in a residential treatment in Berkeley, California, it was an 18-month to 2-year program. I got sent there to that program, right? I stayed there a month and a half, and I was out the door, right? But get this, I went there with 11-year joint suspension hanging over my head. And if I didn't complete that program, I was going to state prison to do 11 years. So if 11-year state prison couldn't hold me in that seat to complete that program, what makes me think that I'm going to be able to walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and get sober? It's not going to happen. That's not my story. I got to be locked up. I got to be locked in where I can't run from me. Because if I know that door is open and I can go through it, what looks like on the other side of that door looks better than my conscious box. And I'd rather run because that's all I did all my life is be a track star and run. That's all I know. So God knew what I needed. And that's where, you know what I'm saying, I got sober is inside the institutions. And when I got out February 10th, 2017, life was like, I didn't know what it was going to be like. But one thing I did is I didn't look back. Because every time I looked back, I went back. I didn't look back. I got out with the toolkit that I had that God placed at my feet that he gave me. And I marched forward. I came home to Sacramento. I got immediately inside the center of the herd. They said do 90 meetings in 90 days. I did 180. I did 180 because I had the desperation of a dying man. You know what I'm saying? And God gave me the gift of desperation. And I knew what I needed to do. So I put 1 year of solid recovery under my feet. I was blessed that my family afforded me that to be able to have that type of foundation. I put 1 year of solid recovery under me and I walked. I walked through life one day at a time. Life curves, life setbacks, falling, death, loss of job, bad relationship, toxic relationship, nearly relapsing. I walked through it. I walked through it one day at a time, and here I stand. And my last run lasted 5 years. So my last run lasted 5 years, and I just got 5 years back walking this journey. That's grace of God. That's the grace of God, 12-step program, and a solid foundation, a solid support group, you know what I'm saying, and active in service. For 3 years, I held a secretary position in my home group, Saturdays, noon meeting, without interruption, for 3 years straight, service, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, again, my life ain't perfect, my journey ain't perfect, but they got a thing around the rooms that says, no matter what, and I'm a part of the no matter what club, no matter what, just don't drink, because guess what, this too shall come to pass, and my feelings ain't fact, and don't trust this right here. This is my worst enemy right here. And my first thought is 10 times out of 10, the worst thought. I got to get to maybe the fourth, fifth, or sixth. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if I've exceeded my time.
Yeah, you're right. You're right there. You're good. Okay. We're done.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. It was a man. I truly appreciate you guys asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope to the newcomers. Man, hey, if you don't believe this program works, like I said, I just stepped out of Pelican Bay State Prison, and that was my 19th state prison in the course of 20 years. And if you don't believe that this program works, then you didn't see this meeting, and you ain't met me. This program works, but you got to work the program. It ain't going to happen by osmosis. Just because I go to the gym and watch people work out don't mean I'm going to get buff. No, I got to work. I got to work out. It don't happen like that. What you put in is what you put out. And if you do to the best of your ability, your 9-step promises will come true.
Thank you, Marcus. Can everyone?